The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The bodybuilding world will never be the same.
Get ready for MD Radio with your host, Sean Ray. We'll take you inside the world of health and fitness with a focus on bodybuilding. Now, here's your host, Sean Ray.
All right, welcome everybody back to another episode of MD Radio. April the 14th. We are midway through the month of April, and the tax man is knocking on the door. Make sure you get your taxes on time for the IRS and all that other good stuff. Another day to remember, 54 years ago, my late brother Rabbit was born on this date. He was laid to rest on January 5th of last year, the same day as my father's birthday. So lots going on in April, good things to remember. Of course, I celebrated my 11-year anniversary on the 4th of April, and we are headed into the second annual Arnold Classic out in Brazil. So lots to talk about here, and I got none other than the bodybuilding historian himself by way of England through Woodland Hills and now out in Florida, the land of the retirement people. Let's bring on our senior staff writer, Peter McGough. Big Peter, welcome back to MD Radio.
Thank you, Sean. The great thing about, I'm glad to be here, and the great thing about being in Florida is I'm the youngest guy here.
That's right. I was out there, and everybody else I saw riding around in golf carts, and there you are still riding your skateboard.
I'm the young buck, yeah.
Well, how is it out there, Peter? I mean, you've been out there a while. I've known Florida to be kind of a sleepy retirement era, and I'm sure it has its pockets of that. But, of course, they also have South Beach and Miami for all those young nightlife people going. But how is it out there? A little bit slower than California?
Very much slower. You know, I think my wife has hinted to you we might be coming back to L.A. We'll see what happens. It's a bit too quiet here on this coast. Miami and South Beach are not my scene.
But, yeah, you've been there and done that. It's a little bit.
yeah.
South Beach is a whole other animal for you, man.
Yeah, I don't have a Lamborghini, so I wouldn't fit in.
Well, we're going to keep a light on out here in California where things are always popping off. But we will be headed back to South Beach in Miami in the month of November, where we'll head into our NPC National Championships, which has been moved from Fort Lauderdale to Miami, Florida. You won't have far to travel then, Pete, and we'll have all of our Team MD there to bring the contest coverage, which a little bit later on in the show we'll be talking about what went down in Orlando over the weekend at the Europa Sports Festival out there, where we saw Justin Compton walk off with his first victory and only his second pro contest. But before we get to that, Pete, I want to just bring a few of our listeners, newer listeners, up to speed with a little bit about you. I mean, everybody that's in the industry knows who you are and what you bring to the table. Of course, Steve Bleckman looks at you as one of our crown jewels of the sport. But there's a lot of young listeners that are tuning in that don't necessarily know a little bit of the background about you and why you're so revered and respected by those of us that have grown up in the industry. Give us a little bit of background on you and how you came to be here at Muscular Development.
I don't know about revered and respected, but anyway, I got into training, working out with bodybuilders in the late 60s when it wasn't fashionable, and I'll make this a short story. You know, it was an underground thing then, but I loved the bodybuilders, used to go to the contests and watch them compete, the annual NABBA Universe in London. And then when I got to the age of 32, 33, I had a major thing happen in my life that made me think, I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to, you know, I was working as a production planner in a massive factory. And I thought, now, I've always wanted to write. I know about bodybuilding. I'm going to get into bodybuilding. So I wrote an article for Bodybuilding Monthly in England. They accepted it. Not only accepted it, told me to come up to the office and gave me the job as editor-in-chief. This is 1983. I knew nothing about publishing, printing, anything. So it was a baptism by fire, but it was the best thing that ever happened. From the Progress to Pumping Press, which you know all about. We met in 88 in England, just after you'd won the Nationals, and I think it's true to say we hit it off. You know, you were always amenable to interviews and photo sessions, and I put you on the first issue, do you remember, of Muscle Mag UK, put you on there with a Union Jack cover. And then Joe hired me, and we went across to California in 91 as a writer, eventually editor-in-chief, then editor-in-chief of Muscle and Fitness, and Muscle and Fitness Hers also. Left there in 2008, and a couple of years later, Steve and I had discussions, and I joined the MD team, the number one team, which I'm very happy with. You know, I don't have the responsibilities I have, but I'm very much enjoying what I'm doing and working with the people. I am yourself, Adina, Bob Chick, Flex, all the guys, Daryl, Nate, Nick Del Toro, Dan Ray, John Hawley, all of them, you know, great group.
Yeah, no doubt Steve's assembled an A-team over here at Muscular Development. You were one of the missing components. I remember being over there for quite some time. I mean, basically Joe snatched everybody up back when the WBF came into the fray in 1990. And by 1991, Joe had signed mostly every major athlete to an exclusive contract, basically blocking out Steve Bleckman in Muscular Development, which had gone for a while all natural and didn't have a whole lot of the major players to cover. Of course, Steve held in there and kind of, I would like to say, saved up and then became a competitor against Joe. And then ultimately, he's now kind of swapped places. He's got the A-listers over here at Team Muscular Development. But with that being said, I remember when the takeover at Weider was going down back in 2003 or 4, and some of the guys were coming in, new guys were coming in, guys were trading places and this, that, and the other. And at the time, I was 1 year removed from the stage in 2002, 2003, and I remember distinctly that I had gotten married in 03, and we were going to try to start right off with making a baby, and Joe was giving me time to do those type of things and reducing my role and responsibility as a competitor. And at the time, ironically, you had pointed out to me, I didn't even have a clue that I was on, like, Flex magazine covers at that time.
Yeah, you know, I look back, and I knew it was at the time. I put you on more covers in my time than any other bodybuilder, you know. And there was a couple of reasons for that. But A, you look great, you know, on the cover, and you projected the right image and everything, and that was great. But also, it was the fact that you did more photo sessions than anybody,
right,
because you never turned them down. I used to get guys to me saying, why aren't I on the cover? Why is Sean on the cover? And I would say, because you limit yourself to one photo session a year. You get there, and you don't put out, you want to pick up a 30-pound dumbbell and get out of that gym as quickly as possible, so we don't end up with any inspirational magic shots, as Chris Lund would say. With Sean, if somebody drops out, Sean's on the phone, do you want me to fill in this afternoon? I'll be there. So we had more photographs of you. The more photographs that are taken of a bodybuilder, the more chance he has of major features, the more chance of putting on the cover. And that's why we had all that inventory on you, that we could do one or maybe even sometimes two covers a year.
I think that was a byproduct of what I thought would ultimately become Sean Ray Productions. Never say no to a photo shoot and always be prepared. And I think part of coming up in the era that I came up in, as the mass movement was taking place in the early 90s and into the late 90s, mind you, you know, Gary Strideham and Lee Haney were coming in on the late end of the 80s as like the two biggest. And then, of course, at the 88 Olympia, Rolf Mueller was the biggest competing at the Los Angeles Olympia, height-wise and weight-wise, of all bodybuilders historically at that time. And then we've got Jean-Pierre Fuchs, and then came Nasser and Occam Albrecht and Jim Quinn, and, you know, we already had Mike Christian. These were 6-foot-plus, 250-plus-pound bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And ironically, with Paul Dillette coming in, a lot of these guys would save every ounce of energy, everything that they had, either for the gym or for the contest. Very few of them even wanted to work on the posing in the posing room, which Chris Lund would say is where the magic happens. You train the muscle, you condition the muscle. And then in front of the camera, for me, it seemed like I could monitor my results better. So all of these guys kept dropping out, And I would kept on stepping in, unbeknownst to me that it would work to my advantage, because I never set out to be the most photographed guy on the cover of Flex.
But well, that's Flex, the way I ended up. Now, one thing I forgot earlier on, then we'll come back to this. I mentioned everybody at MD. For some reason, I don't know why, stupid of me, I forgot David Bay. Worked very closely with him over the weekend on interviews. Great guy, great commentator. He's competed in a couple of weeks. So that was just the old man in me coming out, forgetting a name. But you're right. You know, working with Chris Lund, you know, if he had the right attitude like you were, he would make you look better. It was like preparing for a contest. He'd get the water out of you if you worked with him, you know. And he would make you look good, and he wanted to make you look good. And you'd learn things from him all the time, and you talk about bodybuilders coming to sessions and not really wanting to, you know, lift the roof. I mean, dare I say it, one name, Paul Dillett, God love him. You know, we all love Paul, but I remember one time he turned up for a session, and I think he was doing the Arnold or something, and he brought Chris Cormier with him. And Chris wasn't doing anything until, I think, the night of the champions in May, something like that. So Paul was getting contests ready, and Chris was, not out of shape, but he wasn't at a contest in his mind. And Paul said, you know, Chris, Chris Cormier, let's have me and Chris Cormier working together. It'll add some energy, you know, he'll be my training partner and everything. And, but what actually happened was that, you know, they'd be doing incline barbell press, and Chris would be helping Paul, but actual fact that Paul wasn't using his chest, but Chris Cormier was getting a hell of a trap workout pulling that bar up, and that went on through the whole session. And that was, Paul Dillett is the only guy I know, you know, the office I used to have up there, and there used to be a chair in the corner, just an ordinary office chair. This 280, 300 pound guy would come up. It was only two floors, you remember. He would come up in the elevator, no walking upstairs for our Paul, Mr. Energy Conversator.
Yeah.
And he didn't sit on this chair. He turned it into a bed. It was like, how can you do that? Metaphysically, he would be lying on this chair, you know, which was an ordinary office chair. But,
it was a great time. You know why? Because he'd come from a football background. He's one example of guys, like you said, that did complain about not getting the pictures. And there's a lot of them I've run into that wish they had done more. So I guess the lesson here is, I mean, I didn't know it when I was doing it, was to get as many pictures. And I learned that from Joe. Get as many pictures as you can get, because that's all you're going to have when it's all said and done. So few people go to the show. It's such a cult sport. But a picture will last forever. And I clung to that. And I absorbed what the photographers were telling me, and I pursued the photographers as relentless as they pursued me. And lucky I came up in a time where I dealt with a lot of big guys. I don't want to call them lazy, but I'm going to call a spade a spade. A lot of them were so focused on the bodybuilding show that a photo shoot would literally interfere with their contest preparation, and they would live to regret it. So I guess for all those rookies out there coming up in the game, pictures before, pictures during, and pictures after, that's all you're going to have to show from your career when those medals are, you know, getting rusted on the wall and the trophies are breaking as you move from one location to the next and you age. A picture will last a lifetime. So that's going out to all you rookies out there. And the editor-in-chief over here, Peter McGaugh, he's seen them all. I mean, you ran the magazine out there in England. You ran the one over here in Woodland Hills. You're working with the best one out there now. So those are words of wisdom. And I think the more pictures, the merrier, which, Peter, was why I stayed as close as I could to my contest weight so I would train the muscle and be camera ready when the call came.
You're quite right. I mean, the timelessness of photographs, I'll tell you another example, and this is not sort of having a go at anybody, but I remember Flex Wheeler at the Ironman in 98 was in phenomenal shape. You remember the next week he went on to the Arnold and won that.
Right.
And I think maybe that was better than 93 even. But I knew that if he went to the Arnold, we had to fly him back. By the time we got him back Monday or Tuesday, he wouldn't look as phenomenal. So I said to him after the Ironman, let's do a photo shoot tomorrow morning. You know, and his thing, well, this audience has seen. I said, there's 1,000 people here. We're going to take photographs which the world will see and generations to come will see, and they'll become iconic to celebrate this physique. And it didn't happen. And I always look upon that as one of the big, I would have loved to have captured that physique on that morning when he was just hours away.
It's a sad state of affairs back then because there were a lot of other guys very similar to that, and we missed a lot of great pictures as a result. We're going to take our first commercial break. We're talking with the senior staff writer at Muscular Development and the bodybuilding historian, Peter McGough, by way of Florida, coming back with a little bit more news and information on what happened over the weekend right there in Orlando, Florida, here at MD Radio.
This is Lonnie Tieper from Iron Man Magazine, the greatest of all time. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Focus, strength, recovery, results. Introducing Maximize, brought to you by iForce Nutrition. Tired of the same old caffeine buzz? Are you ready to step into a new world of power, energy, and intensity? Maximize has set a new standard in the supplement world, delivering tunnel vision focus, cell swelling volumization, and unstoppable endurance. Don't settle for the current crop of underclothes products. It's time to join the next generation with Maximize, the only pre-workout supplement you need for extreme gains in strength and performance. Don't just train. Maximize your workouts. Visit www.iforcenutrition.com for details.
Over the years, iForce Nutrition has brought you some of the most powerful muscle-building products ever seen in the bodybuilding world. Now, after years of research and development, we are proud to introduce our first launch into the world of thermogenic fat loss with Adipoxil. Adipoxil isn't your run-of-the-mill fat burner. Adipoxil is new and rewriting the definition of fat loss. Adipoxil's competition strength formula is so powerful, in one cycle, you can go from soft to shredded. When being lean isn't enough, get shredded with Adipoxil. For more information, visit iForceNutrition.com.
With over 300 locations and 2 million members worldwide, Powerhouse Gym has been helping people achieve their goals since 1975. Whether you're visiting the gym for the first time or you're a seasoned professional, you'll see why Powerhouse Gym is the strongest name in fitness. Visit PowerhouseGym.com to get a free guest pass to a location closest to you or to inquire about opening your own Powerhouse Gym location. At Powerhouse Gym, you're not just a number, you're family.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you've ever tried. Because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world, and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like some banned substances. But rest assured, there's nothing illegal in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB living legend Flex Wheeler. And now you too can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Hey, this is Seth Ferosi, IFBB Pro, and you're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Everyone knows that beef is king when it comes to building quality muscle mass. Now you can have all the anabolic power of beef with Carnivore. Beef protein isolate from Muscle Mads, packed with 20 times the creatine of steak and loaded with extra BCAAs. Carnivore is more concentrated than whey. Beef up with Carnivore, the most sought-after muscle-building protein ever created. For more information, visit MuscleMadsRx.com.
You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray. If you want to get in on the action, call Team MD now at 1-866-472-5788. Now back to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
All right, welcome back. We are talking bodybuilding with the bodybuilding historian, Mr. Peter McGough, and I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the fact, Peter, I told you earlier, my brother was born 54 years ago today. He passed away a year ago. Over the weekend, we also had the passing of another brother in iron, and that would be the 1987 middleweight NPC national champion by way of New York out of Arizona, Vince Comerford.
Yeah.
The blonde myth passed away over the weekend, and none other than the gym. I mean, as tragic as that sounds, at the tender age of 52 years old, Peter, I was trying to make sense of this. I actually spoke to his ex-girlfriend that he was dating when he won the national championships, Robin, out of New York, trying to console her and send my condolences. And by the time we finished talking about the Life and Times events, which was a tumultuous lifestyle and life to begin with, both parents were dead, and mother was son of an alcoholic mother, an abusive father, and he battled some recreational drug demons himself, but and tried to stage a comeback in the early 2000s and suffered a heart attack. Ultimately, it was his heart that failed him after coming back into the business and becoming a personal trainer. One of the more likable guys, never heard a bad thing said about him, but revered all his fellow professionals. We wound up laughing towards the end because life is such a short thing there, but how many people died doing what they love to do? If this had been a race car driver who slammed his car up against the wall and died, as tragic as it is, most bodybuilders have the same mentality that bury me big, and a fighter wants to be drug out of the ring, or you're going to have to kill me in the ring to take my title. To know that Vince passed away in a gym, there were only two things he loved. He loved bodybuilding and he loved lifting weights. I mean, that was his passion. So we found some consolation in the fact that his sanctuary is where he passed on onto the other side. And so we're very saddened. Bodybuilding has lost another iconic figure who touched many people at a tender age of 52, and he'll sorely be missed. And, Pete, I know you can speak to Vince as far as the type of person he was.
Yeah, I mean, he was a hell of a character, wasn't he? He wasn't the dull, murmuring, grunting bodybuilder. He had a tremendous turn of phrase when he talked. He loved bodybuilding. He loved training. I did interviews with him in the early 90s. I did an interview after the WBF folded, and I dug it out. I'm actually going to put it online this week, I think. And the way he talks about bodybuilding is almost lyrical.
It's, yeah.
And excitement. And the great thing about Vince was when I first interviewed him, I wasn't with Weider or with anybody. This was 1990s on a Grand Prix tour. I worked for a British magazine. Oh, come on up the hotel room, we'll talk. There was no sort of, who the hell are you, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
And as soon as he picked up that you knew a thing or two, then he was with you, you know, and all the way, and give you everything you got. And he was a tremendous, funny character, full of life, and really, as I say, a great turn of phrase is what I remember him, you know. And he told me the WBF, he was glad he was finished with it. I went for the money, it's the wrong, but I was too civilized. You can't be a bodybuilder and civilized. He says, you got to be an animal, you got to be an animal, you know. And I'm going to be an animal again, he said, you know.
Yeah, well, one thing I know about Vince is he never really understood the level of development that he was at. He looked at everyone as, you know, so good. I mean, he was insecure in a way that he didn't really almost believe that he was an IFBB pro. Like,
Yeah,
he had a very strong reverence for all the bodybuilders that were his colleagues.
Yeah, he was in awe of them. He didn't realize he was the equal of them, better than a lot of them. I mean, his arms are just ridiculous.
Yeah, and that transfers over into what he was trying to give back. He was a very astute personal trainer. Just to hear his students speak of, you know, how hands-on he was and how giving and caring he was, we certainly did lose not just a great bodybuilder, but a great person. And that's the tragedy in losing someone early. You'd like to see these guys live forever. Unfortunately, we know that we're all born to die. But I did find consolation in knowing that he passed away doing what he loved best, and that was in the gym. So he'll be missed, but he will not be forgotten. But with that being said, we were talking about contracts, Peter, during the commercial break, and I had mentioned that Joe Weider had kind of boxed Steve Blackman out in the 90s and locked everyone up by contracts because of the threat of the WBF coming along. But then that kind of turned the corner, and some of these athletes became more available, and we noticed that Steve was starting to lock people up with contracts, and rightfully so. He'd been boxed out for so long, but he then created a lot of opportunities for bodybuilders that, for instance, Joe may have not been interested in, giving a more equal playing field and an opportunity to athletes to be professionals and follow their careers in certain areas that Joe was not interested in. Tell me what your experience was regarding the contract era.
Yeah, I mean,
especially me, since I came up underneath you.
Steve was patient, and Steve, I mean, you know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, and he's leading the marathon at the moment. He's the one that's giving more opportunities to more bodybuilders, more sponsorships, covering more shows, doing more online, more in the magazine, big all that business. And this isn't PR bullshit. You know, I won't say anything that I don't believe is true. You know, right. That's the truth. But interesting, you talk about contracts, Sean. I'm going to tell you something that I'm sure you've never heard before.
What's that? I thought I heard it all.
Right. So you're under contract with Weider. It's 2001, 2002. Do you remember 2002? You didn't compete after 2001, but you hadn't announced your retirement. It was like you were going to take a little bit of time off and come back. That was sort of, there was a period when that was in force. And because you weren't doing the Olympia that year, I asked you to do a preview, not just a little sidebar, but a full-blown 8-page feature on who's going to do what and who's going to do with the other. So we published that, I don't know, probably came out in August, a couple of months before the Olympia. And I'm in the office one day just sitting there. Well, not just sitting there, I was busy, but the phone rang. And on came Ben Weider and Wayne D'Amelio.
Yeah.
And they tore into me and said, you know, Sean Ray wrote this article on the Olympia, and it was disgraceful. It was more Wayne. The phrase that got them was that you said, but we all know Ronnie Coleman's got one hand on the trophy anyway, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, so, you know what? Listen, before you go any further, yeah. Ronnie had won the 98, the 99, the 2000, and 2001. So we were going into year number five. Yeah. Knowing that Dorian won six in a row and Haney won eight in a row,
yeah.
I don't think I was too far off base, but go ahead. I want to hear the rest of this.
So they said, we're going to talk to Joe, and we're going to get Sean Ray's contract taken from him.
Amazing.
I said, if you go to Joe and do anything to Sean Ray's contract, either try and get it taken off him or reduced, you'll have to tell Joe at the same time that he has to find a new editor-in-chief of Flex magazine, because you shouldn't be threatening Sean with sanctions. You should be threatening me, because I'm the editor-in-chief of this magazine. Every comma, every period, every word, every photograph, photo caption that goes in this magazine, I see and approve. So I approve that. So I'm the villain, not Sean. So you take this any further, and I will resign. And Ben sort of, you know, calmed it down, and that was the end of that. Ben,
I can imagine, and I know Wayne D'Amelio well, that, mind you, this is on the heels of the 2001 Mr. Olympia press conference where I called him out, first and last press conference that was ever sold on video because of the controversy and I think the bravado that I had at that on that going out party for me. Wayne had already had it in for me. I think he might have riled up Ben Weider to the degree that they came to you. But Pete, I always knew that about you. You were a bodybuilder's champion, not a champion, but a champion of causes. You knew what we went through and what we had to do, and you're a writer, and I was trying to write, and for you to defend me that way, I'm not surprised that you did it. I am surprised that I hadn't heard about that, and that's how that played out, but that's who I knew you to be, because I knew you were that way with all the bodybuilders. I don't feel like I'm special that you did that for me, but I knew you were that type of individual. And lo and behold, of course, I never did retake the stage, and I did only stay on for another year. That year was the year, Peter, I had gotten engaged to my now wife of 11 years, and I took that year off to enjoy the process of getting engaged and then setting up a wedding and then being present in the wedding in 2003 and then constantly trying to produce a baby in 2004, which we miscarried at the 12-week mark, and ultimately we got pregnant and had my firstborn, Asia, who's now eight, in 2005, and I'd moved on. I moved on to Muscle Mag International, which caught you by surprise, but I went on to Muscle Mag International for 2 years before I landed with Steve. But you stepping up and saying that was something, that's who you are, and that's why Joe hired you. I believe at the time it was Wayne D'Amelio, and mind you, Wayne D'Amelio's departure from the Weider Enterprise is very reminiscent of what he was trying to do with me. He was not unceremoniously let go. Wayne D'Amelio was fired.
Yeah,
so I'm not surprised he tried to stir the pot that to get me fired.
Yeah, I mean, it was, 13, 14 years ago. I've often thought of telling you not, and I never told you because I didn't want to say, hey, look, I just did you a big favor. I don't need any payback. But my job, as I saw it, I mean, with the athletes we had, and even athletes that we didn't have, you know, was to guard them and defend them and be a buffer and give them encouragement and advice and see them through. Jay Cutler came to me in 2000. He was with Weider. You know, it was at the Olympia 2000. He asked me to come to his room. He said, I've got this massive deal from ISS for something ridiculous.
Right.
Weider won't, I know Weider won't go, but if I do, it'll be held against me. When I said, absolutely not. We'll give you the same coverage in the magazines. I'm not going to try and talk you out of 200 grand a year or whatever stupid figure, or not stupid, but figure it was. Wow. That would be disingenuous, because I say to bodybuilders in those situations, you don't know how long your career is. There could be an injury or whatever. Take what you can whilst you can. So I think somebody in that position has to be part of the that phalanx of bodybuilders, not a bodybuilder, but you're there to encourage them and pass on your experience and knowledge. And you know what, Sean, it wasn't a false thing with me, but I do get it back from guys now, and it makes me feel at this time of my life, you know, it gives me a little bit of buzz to have guys, you know, sort of thank me for what happened in the past. Sometimes they didn't realize what was going on. They didn't realize, you know, how much it helped them. But it's only, Flex Wheeler is one, you know, he said it, you know, I used to give you guys trouble, but I can see now you were always trying to protect me and guard me and get me going in the right direction. So
yeah, hindsight is very much 20/20. The older we get, it's very, things become a lot more clear. Because mind you, as a bodybuilder, we are focused on eat, sleeping, and training, and that's it. And some guys had kids, some guys had wives to pile on top of that, and even others like Ronnie was balancing work.
Yeah.
And so here you were having to deal with all these different types of personalities and obviously try to shine the light as bright as you could, but there was always an undercurrent that the bodybuilders had to fight against. And I believe in a lot of areas, for as much good as Wayne D'Amelio did for the IFBB, there was another side of that coin that I had privy to see. I saw a lot of it, and clearly we are at a better place in bodybuilding now. Mm-hmm. With Jim Mannion and Rafael Santoja at the helm, than we were on my exit of the sport in the early 2000s. But that's another story with regards to Wayne D'Amelio, because we needed a guy like Wayne D'Amelio to get to where we are today. But more importantly, Joe needed you to be that balancing that we were missing. We needed you as that balancing act. You were the liaison between the athletes and the brass at that time. And now here, we're, you know, growing old together, and clearly the athletes are benefiting from your wisdom and your knowledge, and I think the athletes maturing are able to appreciate what you brought to the table. So with that, Peter, I've got to bring on our next guest, and I know you've got some other business to do, but we're going to continue to check out your exclusive articles right there at Muscular Development. You're doing a great job on the boards. Yeah, put some more of those stories up there that we've never heard of and seen before, because on No Bull, that's the gym. That's where we go to get those stories. So I appreciate you putting those up there on our site.
Great. Did you want me to stay on for the...
Yeah, hang on a second, because you were there in Orlando,
yeah.
And we got another guy who was rocking the mic. Let's bring on the other guy in Florida, or actually now in Georgia. Let's bring on the voice of professional bodybuilding, Bob Chicarillo, our IFBB athletes rep. Welcome, Bob.
Yo, Sugar, Sean, and Peter. What's going on, guys?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I am well, my friend. Here
long
back
time
in...
No
Atlanta GA, and 1 week off, and then it's 23 straight weeks of shows coming up for me.
Well, nobody said that you didn't like hard work, man. That's why you got the 10,000 square foot mansion in the heliport in your backyard, and the big fat swimming pool, and the Playboy wife, and the kid that's getting ready to inherit the world. Bob, you were at the microphone. We saw for the second time the arrival of Justin Compton, who controversially last year in July wound up in like fifth place, and the place erupted, and here he winds up in first place. And from what I can see, mind you, I'm online at the Muscular Development Forums, I had him as the runaway winner, with John De La Rosa fast becoming a much more mature and improved bodybuilder, solidly locked in second. Cliff notes real quick, and I'll let Peter challenge what you have to say.
Well, he won't challenge what I have to say, because he knows I'm right all the time. So.
There you go.
There you go. Thank you, and good night, everybody.
Yeah, Justin, it was actually, I had it kind of a solid one, too, but it was actually a very close race. I mean, John
really?
De La Rosa is good. He's very good, and he wasn't lacking anything. He nailed it dead on, and these guys were a lot closer than people think, but it was absolutely not any kind of a runaway. But you couldn't really deny what Justin Compton brought, especially in the prejudging. What made it a little bit closer was the fact that he was starting to fade towards the end of prejudging in the later rounds, and John De La Rosa seemed to be getting better as he was going. So those two were kind of neck and neck, and it absolutely came down to the night show. But that could have swung the other way very easily if Compton had showed up a little bit off at the night show.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, it was a lot closer than straight first. I mean, it's almost like a boxing match in 12 rounds where one guy just edged each round and you would get a 12-0 result, you know, but it was close. That's the way it was. I mean, I felt Justin did fade a little bit on the Saturday. You know, he sort of was a little bit blurred in the abdomen. But the great thing about this show was it was a breath of fresh air to watch two young guys who were just about complete, who were in shape and battling it out. It was something we hadn't seen before, these two. I mean, John Del Rose is a hell of a bodybuilder. Justin Compton is a phenomenon. I mean, he's only 25. He's not 26 till next month. And he's so thick from the side and the shape and everything. He just did enough to edge John. And I think John was, to me, it's difficult to say percentages-wise, but maybe it was 99.9% on the Friday. And I can't get rid of the thought that originally he was going to do Brazil in 2 weeks, and then last Sunday made the decision to do this. And I think sometimes, you know, when your eggs are all in one basket, then everything has to be let loose. I'm not saying he took his foot off the pedal, but I think sometimes if you plan something for 10, 12 weeks out, it's sometimes better to stick to that. Well, but, I mean, who knew Justin Compton was going to look like this last year? You know, the knock on him was the lack of sweep to his thighs, and now here he is with wolf-like thighs and striations and everything.
Yeah, no question, Justin came on, and clearly from the looks of things, by the evening show, it looked like he was having some stomach control issues, and it looked like his abs were a little bit washed out. I don't know if that's from eating too much food after prejudging, thinking he had it as a lock, but I know the show is not over till it's over. Noted, Bob, this guy is not going to be at the Arnold Classic. That was the show he was simply signing up for in Brazil, so I was surprised to see Justin jump on that stage and do as good as he did, thinking that he was preparing for Brazil. Will John De La Rosa continue on to Brazil? Because from the looks of things, another 2 weeks, John De La Rosa could peak.
Yeah, well, John's original plan was Brazil, and that's what Peter was making mention of, is that he basically decided to go into this show kind of at the last minute. I think it was still a good decision. He got a great look from the judges. We got to see what he brought to the table and his improvements for this year. And more importantly, Sean, he now has 2 weeks to kind of hone that talent. I mean, he's there now. I mean, he's on these skating and easy into Brazil. Now, even though he's got a hell of a lineup there, because you've got guys like Bajecki and William Bonac, his emergence this year, Kuklo, Morel, and onward and onward, I think it was a good move. Like I say, I like an athlete coming off a show, going into another show. He can easily hold that conditioning and sharpen it up just a hair, and then you know, let the chips fall where they may. But I don't want to get too far past the rest of our top five. Freddie Smalls actually ends up in third place. Great spot for Freddie. He sharpened it up a little bit, but it looks like he's finally starting to get it down, or he's starting to get to that, you know, end point of conditioning. And if he can nail the conditioning, he ain't missing a whole lot. I mean, this guy's a challenge and a threat to any show he goes into. Another newcomer, Daniel Toth, ends up in fourth from Hungary. Great physique, a little bit blocky and a little bit up and down, you know, thick, but very thick muscle, enough to keep him in the fourth. And another guy, Eddie Wilson, from Suriname, which is actually in South America. I actually had to ask him where that was because I wasn't familiar. But very good, very muscular physique for a newcomer. Looked very impressive.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a well-balanced show. A couple of those names are not all that familiar. I do know that Brazil is going to be interesting, and it's going to be a test for all of those guys, especially John De La Rosa, because I believe this lineup in Brazil is going to be much harder. However, we've got the X factor, Bob. When you travel across the ocean to another country to compete, so many things can go wrong to these rookie young pros, not to mention so many things can go right, as we saw Brandon Curry sneak down there a year ago and walk off with the first ever title, upsetting the veteran in Tony Freeman. So a lot of big things going on. What else happened on the? Was there some women's bodybuilding over there? Was there 212 bodybuilding? What else was going on in Orlando?
Didn't have any 212 or women's bodybuilding. What we did have was a very good competition in the bikini, where Sarah LeBlanc took top honors. Now, this is her second pro win in as many tries this year, but she's made some great improvements over last year, bringing a more streamlined physique. So it was the between her and Lacey DeLuca, it was the battle of the behinds on the stage. So I know Peter was riveted to his seat.
Well, yeah, I had Lacey as a clear winner, but, you know, I look at... never mind.
Yeah, hold that one, Peter. Jason Poston, actually, who was probably favored to win this show, did. What was most impressive, Sean, was that there was 38 men's physique pros in this competition,
wow,
which was huge. Now, that's on top of John Lindsay's show, which was actually the same day. He had 29 or 30 at his show. So these guys are out there supporting the IFBB and supporting their own. And I tell you what, they pulled about 10 guys out in the first call-out. You could have flipped a coin to put any one of them in the top five. That's how good a competition it was. And big, big congrats to Francis Mendez in the women's physique, who brought a very good physique to the table. Nice little blend, not too overly muscular, but in condition, and really epitomized everything that women's physique is about. Congratulations to her.
I saw her as the winner. She had a very striking appearance, you know, and very good shape, shoulders, waist, and not too heavily muscled, and delivered the goods. Just going back to the men, the one surprise to me was, well, a couple of surprises. You know, Marius Doner from South Africa finished eighth. Now, when he came out, I saw him as a shoo-in to be called out in the top five or six and take the comparison and then see where he went from there. I just don't... he was hard and he was tight and
agreed.
Had the shape. And, you know, and the other thing is, with all due respect, I mean, Fred Small's best he's ever been. He's on the right track. Great guy. Deserved third place. But one of the judges had him second over John. And,
No. Yeah, I mean, like you said, God bless Freddie, but there's a lot of things to be desired still in his physique, namely in the chest department, in the thigh detail, and even the ham separation back there. But, you know, he is a showman, he's a veteran, but, yeah, he wasn't going to be John De La Rosa. Bob, overall, the weekend in Orlando, the growth of the weekend, and knowing now that the winner is automatically invited to the 2015 Arnold Classic in Columbus, Ohio, he also is now qualified for his first ever Mr. Olympia, which we celebrate the 50-year anniversary this September. How much more can they do out there in Orlando with what Ed and Betty are doing?
Well, let me explain something to you, my friend. Let me tell you, as big as this Orlando show was, and it was huge, 450,000 square feet at the Orlando Convention Center, and it was totally filled, and we've increased it with many different types of events. There was anything from NAGA wrestling for the kids to girls cheerleading, arm wrestling. You know, they got it kind of all there. Now, it looks like the Arnold, but there are much bigger and bolder plans going forth this next year, which I'll be able to unveil as we get going throughout the year, as I kind of work with Ed and Betty and Eric Hillman on these Europas throughout the season. So there's some big changes coming, and these things, if people think these are big now, wait till to see what's in store for next year. But, you know, right now we're working on kind of building the rest of them. We've got Hartford coming up. Dallas is actually coming up in just 4 weeks. That is going to be proving to be a big show, obviously, off the heels of Brazil coming up in 2 weeks, because Steve Kuklo is on tap. He's going to be back in Dallas defending the title. That's going to be an interesting showdown. But first, he's got to get back Brazil. You've got Bajecki, Boniek, De La Rosa, obviously, fresh off a second-place show, and Juan Morel, who looks like he's made significant progress since last year. So this Brazil lineup is impressive.
All right, Pete, you got the last word before I take my final commercial break. I know you got to get out of here. What did you see that you liked? We've got about 30 seconds.
Remarkably enough, this was my first Europa, and I was so impressed by Ed and Betty's organization, the size of it, the friendliness of it. I had a feel-good feel to it. You know, the way they treated the competitors and talked to everybody, it was really professional, but very, very friendly. I was very impressed with what Eddie and Betty and the team brought to the table. Well done.
All right. With that, we'll take our final commercial break. Come back with the voice of professional bodybuilding, Bob Ciccarillo. Thank you, Pete, for calling in. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
This is Marcus Haley of The Common, and you're listening to MD Radio with Sugar Sean Ray.
Arginine and AAKG are dead.
Nitric oxide war is over. MHP introduces InnoBomb, the world's first clinically tested nitric oxide maximizing formula. Need to experience real workouts and pumps with InnoBomb.
But one of the guys that gives a lot of credit is Steve Blackman from Muscular Development. I mean, those guys have done an extraordinary job for years and years and years to promote health, to promote fitness, to promote strength, to promote bodybuilding, powerlifting, weightlifting, and all of those kind of things. So the contributions they made is gigantic, and I hail them for that.
Anyone who understands the supplement market knows that fat burners as a class of products are virtually dead. Why? Because none of these products have delivered the kind of real results people have been looking for. I'm not kidding when I tell you, that's all over now. Because Mitotropin is so powerful and so profoundly different than anything else on the market, we couldn't even call it a fat burner for fear it would be associated with this useless category. That's how good it is. Welcome to the world of Mitotropin.
With over 300 locations and 2 million members worldwide, Powerhouse Gym has been helping people achieve their goals since 1975. Whether you're visiting the gym for the first time or you're a seasoned professional, you'll see why Powerhouse Gym is the strongest name in fitness. Visit powerhousegym.com to get a free guest pass to a location closest to you or to inquire about opening your own Powerhouse Gym location. At Powerhouse Gym, you're not just a number, you're family.
This is IFBB Pro Mike Valentino. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Shop the new MD Supplement Superstore, where you can find more of your favorite brands and products, upgraded customer service, and engaging cutting-edge research, along with the industry's most competitive prices.
This is IFBB Pro, Jason Hull. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray. If you want to get in on the action, call Team MD now at 1-866-472-5788. Now back to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
All right, we are talking bodybuilding for those of you that have been hiding under a rock. And Bob, I was talking to you earlier about heading down to Brazil, South America. I was there last year. MC'd the contest in English, of course. I'm not bilingual. We got our good friend Tony Doherty, who's going to be rocking the mic for all those athletes on the stage, and of course those international judges that don't speak Portuguese. It's not actually in the city of Rio. It's actually in the city of Barra, B-A-R-R-A. And I mapped it. It's about a good 30 minutes away from Rio, where I stayed at Copacabana Beach last year. This time it's a little bit different. So they had to move it to a bigger facility because they had such a huge response to the first year ever. And, again, they did witness last champion Brandon Curry, who I don't see on the list to head down there. Brandon won $35,000 for his efforts last year, Bob, and I believe they had a fitness contest that went down there as well. So it sets the stage. That's the next big show on the calendar, Humongous Expo, and Arnold Schwarzenegger following up with his globalization of the Arnold Classic. Going to go down on the 26th of April, and that's going to the final of the prejudging, I believe, starts at 8 p.m. They start things a little bit later out there down south, Bob. They also have different categories. They've got the Men's Open and Fitness Pro Open, along with some amateur stuff going on. And we'll be covering all of that stuff right here at MuscularDevelopment.com. So check that out and go to our boards to find out more information. Bob, with that being said, I just told Peter a minute ago about, you know, the passing of Vinny Comerford, and I know you're also from that area where he hailed from.
Yeah.
And you probably had your experiences with him. We are going to miss him.
Vince was a great guy, man. I mean, and I got a chance to kind of reconnect with him. He kind of disappeared for a long time, and then he kind of resurfaced this past year or so, and so we got a chance to kind of catch up. And you know, I'll always remember Vince. It's funny because obviously, as we both saw him here, you know, he's got the big beard working, the bald head, you know, and it, you know, kind of looking like Rick Drayson, you know. But back in the day, you know, when he had the blonde hair, the blonde myth, the big arms, I mean, that's always what sticks out to me in that much talked about 1987 national championships, and which was important for all three of us, being that it was my first national show where I'd take a fifth place in the heavies. You right. obviously would win the entire thing, and beating a very impressive Phil Hill, who was a complete beast out there.
Yeah.
And then you know, you on to the IFBB pros, and Vince Comerford winning those middleweights. And it's funny because that's one of the last times, literally, I can remember a middleweight winning his class, and people actually saying, like, you know what, I think you might have a shot at the overall, except he ran into you.
Yeah, well, and at the end of the day, it's not always about how big you are. I think that's where I set myself apart, because, you know, Phil Hill was sickly. He was just from another planet. He was Victor Richards type of big, and he was big to the other heavyweights. They didn't have super heavyweights. Heavyweight was anything over 200 pounds, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And he was very much impressive. But again, Vinny by himself looked every bit an overall champion. He was the Lee Priest of his time, and he'll be sorely missed. And again, we don't know when the time or the hour or the day is when we call, but you know, I told Peter, going out in the gym, he probably would have had it no other way. He was sick. He didn't just wake up and one day you know, die. He was actually ill, and he had known that he was ill. He just didn't know how gravely ill. He had the heart condition. But going into Brazil, are we going to be shock and awe by Juan Morell? Is Juan Morell going to show up, or are we going to see John De La Rosa finally walk off victorious? Remember, John De La Rosa turned pro by winning the overall USA Championship. Juan Morell has been a promise that hasn't been kept since he won the Europa out there in Connecticut. Everybody's waiting for his arrival. What kind of surprises are we in for?
Well, first surprise, honestly, I'm a little surprised that Brandon Curry didn't elect to go back there to defend his title. And I'm not so sure. You know, we don't see a lot of returning champions these days, Sean. I'm not quite sure why. I mean, that used to kind of be like the, you know, it was almost like a given. You know, you win a show and you want to kind of, you know, you got a good feeling about that show. Obviously, you did enough to win it. You'd think you'd want to go back.
I think Brandon had a kid, though, Bob. I mean, that's stands to reason. I think
he's got 100 kids. I mean, what's it, you know, that's not, he's not in the new territory. Come on, what's he got, 10, 12 kids now? I mean,
that's cool. Well, so, if you see his wife, I'd go for 20.
God bless his wife, man. She's the best. But I tell you what, you know who you got to look at? You really, I mean, listen, De La Rosa is going to be on the money, and he's going to be good. Kuklo, I think, is much improved, and, you know, that kid's got, I've always been a big fan of Steve's physique. I mean, that's a physique, to me, that's a top six Olympian physique. Now, the question is can he get, you know, can he combine that nice size and structure and shape with the conditioning necessary? Bajecki has now had a full year working with DJ, with Dennis James. So now in the Menace camp, you know what's he going to bring? So that's going to be interesting. But I tell you who you got to watch out for. You got to watch out for that William Bonac, because this kid is for real, man. That is a hell of a physique. And you know what? He may be the smallest guy out there in terms of height, but do not be surprised if this kid comes out on top. Would not surprise me, Sean, if he wins the whole thing.
Yeah, and you know what? I was in Australia, and arguably he was giving Sean Roden everything he could handle, especially in the back poses, and this is where he's going to come to be a good threat. He's got so much thickness and density, but again, this is a guy who's got to transverse a very long flight to get down south to Brazil. He's got to travel further than most of these other guys. And so this is where the water retention may come in to help some of the other guys that don't have to travel as far. But the pressure, I believe, really is going to be on Steve Kuklo. Now, he's a young guy, 6-foot bodybuilder, went out there in Dallas a year ago. People are expecting the arrival the same way that Dennis Wolf did. He took a couple of years, and now Dennis has arrived. Well, Steve has been victorious, and he's tasted that. He can't go on a show like this and disappear somewhere outside the top five and expect a lot of respect afterwards. Juan Morell, again, people have been waiting for him. He's taken a lot of time off since his last competition. So if William Bonac stays the course, and it's tough because, mind you, he competed the first weekend of March, and now he's got to compete the last weekend of April. That's a long run, and then go all the way down to South America to do it.
True.
So many factors here where it can play in or out of the hands of the lucky bodybuilder, but I think it's going to come down to the bodybuilder that brings the conditioning, because I tell you, in Brazil, those guys are used to coming in shape down there. You know a thing or two about what Eduardo Correa looks like.
Oh, yeah.
They expect these athletes to show up in shape and not to kind of just, you know, come in shape like we saw out in Orlando. They're going to be looking for condition.
You know, there's a name you've just brought up and a good point. Now, you kind of wonder why Eduardo didn't throw his hat in the ring. No 212 there, but he certainly could bump it up a few pounds and, you know, give it a go in his own hometown. He'd certainly be the, you know, the hometown hero. But you've also got Balto Abispor, who I understand is going to be throwing his hat into the 212 ring, which I think is smart, but he's obviously in here in the open against a big boy. So
yeah.
Freddie Smalls makes his return again in 2 weeks off of Orlando. If he can tighten it up, he can throw himself in the mix. You got Eddie Nunn, you got the Pac-Man, and Marius Donne. Now, I'm with Peter, you know, just going back to that Orlando quick. I thought Donne was good. I mean, his stance is a little funky. He's got that wide-legged European thing going on there, you know, and his poses are a little awkward, but they're not, you know, crazy awkward. But I thought he could have at least been in contention for fourth or fifth. I was a little surprised he ended up where he did. But if he can just, you know, tighten it up a little bit, get his color a little bit darker on stage, I'm a big fan of Marius's physique. Again, another guy I think could possibly sneak himself in that top five, top six, and Pac-Man's really got to come out with something here, bro, because he lost a lot of ground from last year.
Exactly. He does. And, I'm a fan of Marius, too, but I'm also one of those other detractors that say, look, the writing's on the wall. Get out with your health while you can, because there's a lot of things you're going to have to do to be number one, and then you've got to weigh, you know, whether or not it's going to be worth the effort. One small last breaking bit of news before we call it a day, Bob. We've only got a minute left, but Sean Roden, the winner of the Australian Pro Championships, and arguably one of the guys that could potentially sit on the Olympia throne if anything ever happened to Phil Heath, broke his foot. And that's going to be a big setback for Sean Roden. We're going to find out through the test of time whether or not he's going to make it to the 50th annual Mr. Olympia in September, or if he'll be sitting right there next to us in the audience with a front row seat. We're going to find out. Our best wishes for a speedy recovery are going out to Flexitron Sean Roden on the broken foot. He was at the expo there while you were working over the weekend.
How did he break his foot?
I don't know. We're going to have to go to the Muscular Development site to check that out. Go into No Bull on Muscular Development. Maybe there'll be some people in there talking about it. I didn't get the details. I just got the news. And all I do, Bob, is report.
If there's anything he can afford to lose, it's sweep on the legs. I don't think it's going to really take away from his Olympia preps. Luckily, it's happening now in April and not in June or July. Then he's out.
Well, he's a warrior, and he'll do everything he can do to be there. But with that, we come to a close of this issue of Muscular Development Radio. Next week on Easter Sunday, we're not going to be having a show on the Monday. So we're going to come back with the results of the Brazilian Arnold Classic on Monday the 27th, I believe that is. And, Bob, that might be you because I think I get home on the 28th. Either way, tune in to MuscularDevelopment.com and find out what's going on with MD Radio. Everyone have a safe and happy Easter Sunday. Thank you, Peter McGough, for calling in. And the voice of professional bodybuilding, Bob Ciccarillo. For Bob, Peter, I'm Sean Ray. Peace. We're out.
You've been listening to MD Radio, a look at the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. Join Sean Ray again next Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.